Welcome to CFO Talk. I'm your host, Steve Rosewall, Chief Learning Officer at CFO.University. Joining us today from Wichita, Kansas is Lynn Nguyen. Lynn is a dynamic business leader whose career spans accounting, operations, and trading before becoming strategic global pricing leader at Cargill. He now runs LG Strategic Solutions, where commercial excellence, strategic pricing, and revenue growth win the day. Lynn has spent years working alongside CFOs and finance leaders, particularly in manufacturing and complex operating environments, helping confront some of the most persistent and costly challenges facing business leaders today: product pricing, inventory valuation, and the unintended consequences of using poor costing techniques. Lynn, it is a thrill to have you on CFO Talk.
Steve, thanks for the invitation to visit with you today. Very excited to be able to share a little bit of the learnings, knowledge, and insights that gained through LG Strategic subsequent to my retirement from Cargill. I've interacted with now well over 20 companies around the world, and there's some insights that have popped up that I think are very valid in sharing with your audience and with other CFOs who are out there, and how that comes together in potential profitability and commercial problems, which are sometimes not all commercially driven. Sometimes they're internally caused. And I think we'll get into that later in the discussion.
I'm really excited. Last time we did a CFO talk, you did it on pricing specifically with the CFOs. And we've actually made a course, included that in there. That's being released soon. We haven't quite got it fully ready to go, but I can't wait to introduce you and that pricing course to our community. We were talking a couple of weeks ago, and you really picked my, we're just catching up, and you said, Steve, there was an epiphany I had, and you brought it into this, you said, and it really involves CFOs. You said, I'm finding pricing issues, meaning profitability problems, where CFOs are relying too much on their ERP systems for their costings, and their costing techniques are outdated or not up to speed. And so we said, hey, this is a great opportunity to help our CFOs in our community see what you're seeing from a very 10,000-foot level, but be able to speak to the CFO on what these issues are. Please tell us more about what you've discovered.
Yeah, Steve, as I've worked through LG Strategics, I primarily am working with C-suites, the combined C-suites from the commercial side, the financial side, the CEOs, the entire C-suites of these businesses, and oftentimes the board level as well. And usually the businesses are contacting me saying, hey, we've got an issue around pricing. Can you help us with this one? Whether it be a strategy issue or an operational challenge that they have. And sometimes it's both. And sometimes it's even way deeper than that. But inevitably, what you're looking at is there's a disconnect in the profitability that the business. And as you dig into that and look into it, and I've seen this on multiple occasions, this is not just one single business that I've encountered, but multiple businesses. One of the factors that has just really jumped out is in businesses who are traditionally cost plus pricing strategy deployed businesses. The imperative is that you actually understand what your real costs are to actually sell your products correctly. That's not earth shattering, but that's the implication that you have to really understand your cost.
Yeah.
So as I dive into that and dig into that, what I've found in multiple instances is that businesses have, in certain instances, become over-reliant on the cost structures that are being reported out of their ERP systems to then drive what they're selling and their pricing into the marketplace as, which is a very suboptimal.
Well, how do you discover this issue? When you're talking to people, when they're going to say, we think we should be making more money, or you're telling them you should be making more money, how does that investigation go? And then is there any core learning from the ERP issues?
Multiple examples, and I'll lay out a couple just to showcase it. But this I've seen in both manufacturing businesses and primary processing or complex manufacturing processes, as well as in distribution businesses. So I've seen it happening in these in distributors, third-party logistics even. I've seen it in multiple businesses. So this is not a case that is just manufacturing driven, even though it's the most visible in manufacturing. And I'll use manufacturing examples because it'll play through and you can see how it would impact other businesses and other industries. As an example, the ERP systems, and it doesn't matter the ERP. It's not an ERP specific issue. It's an ERP challenge that the finance world and the commercial world have to come together on to resolve. As an example, whenever a product is being processed and you're making multiple products from that raw material, which is very common in primary processing businesses, chemical industry, petrochemicals, you go down the list of primary processing businesses, timber. That's, you can just think of all the different kinds of primary processing.
My background goes back to corn processing and bean processing.
Corn processing would be what, although corn processing doesn't have this issue because they know how to do it. But what I've seen and what I've experienced is the products that are produced out of that, you're going to get multiple different product streams, finished products coming out of that. And many times the setup that is inside the body of the ERP, where it is capturing the cost to produce, which is what the ERP is designed to do, is then flowing that through in virtually equal values as it goes out. So when that winds up at an inventoryable value, and say you've got something that's being processed, and it doesn't matter what the value, just say it's a dollar. So every product that comes out is a dollar. Now, in the real world, we know that some of those products came out and they're going to be worth a lot more than that, and some are going to be worth a lot less than that, because that's the nature of your premium products, your mid-tier products, and your lower value co-products, and sometimes even byproducts. But when you have that equal valuation that's structured in inventory, in total, financially, your inventory value is right at the time of production. But in reality, what you're not reflecting is what's the real value of that inventory. And if you are a cost-plus pricer and not a value-based pricer, you actually have a strategy that will drive you to make some really bad decisions that impact your profitability. Because you can see, if you've got that level set, and you've got something in that example, and I said, everything's at a dollar, you may have produced something that's worth $9 here and something that's worth 10 cents here, as an example. So what happens is, if you're a cost plus pricer and then you say, okay, I want a 30% margin or whatever the number is, or even a 50% margin. So you sold that $1 one at $2 when it was really worth $9. And then you wind up sitting on inventory that is way overvalued relative to what the value in the market is. And what happens is your working capital goes through the roof because you're sitting on inventory you can't move because you've got it valued too high relative to your financial records. And you probably already sold your higher value products because you've underpriced them into the market, and you've lost all the profitability possibility on that already because it's already gone and off to your customers. Nice. Huge issue. And again, I've seen this in Oracle ERP systems. I've seen it in SAP ERP systems. I've seen it in Microsoft Dynamics ERP systems. So it's not the ERP system that is causing it. It truly circles back to your audience. A large part of the time, it's the finance executives who are setting the policies around inventory valuation.
You know what?
That's why it's really critical to get to your audience.
So a finance person, a lot of production, even a procurement, look at, we're going to build inventory. You're looking at it from the other perspective. What come out? You're looking from the customer aspect. And I think that is the huge shift that you're making, is we're looking upstream. Here, this product came in, corn, make it simple for me. Corn goes in, we get starch, you get oil, because it comes out, and we're going to value those. But those are very, like you said, Cargill knows this. They know what high fructose corn is, what the distillers, dry grains, and everything else is worth. But in the end, it's what the customer will pay for it. So you got to be able to bifurcate that. And if your costing systems look like your cost plus, you're absolutely going to miss the bullet on both profitability, and you're going to have some inventory you can't move. I love the perspective. You're coming from the customer perspective, not from building up the inventory as, hey, we use this raw material, made it to something else, have some work in process, we added some cost to it. Love that concept. Keep going.
Yeah, it's just the thing that happens to these businesses. And again, if I had seen it just once, I'd say it's an isolated incident. One data point does not make a trend. In the last 15 months, I've seen it in multiple businesses. And I say, there is a trend here. And I think some of that is that even on the finance side, coming together with the commercial side, the view of the value of inventory is not reflective of real market values. And in this case, the concept of lower of cost or market is actually not the issue until you wind up with all of this lower valued product that's inventoried at a higher value. And then technically, from a finance perspective, you're probably in a position you should write your inventory down and record the loss. Really bad outcomes for your CFO crap.
Well, you mentioned that the lower cost doesn't really impact you until you sold all the high value stuff at margins you were too small. And I, right. But is that a mindset issue that you know, and so I'll be full disclosure. I come from a mark-to-market background, right? Sure. I was in trading divisions the whole time. So I was in the grain division. I was in the financial markets, in the energy, all commodities, all traded, and everything was mark-to-market. So we never had this problem. But in typical manufacturing, you're building up a cost base. And that's the whole philosophy. That's what accounting, the conservative accounting has done.
Yep.
And I wonder if that mindset isn't part of the inhibitor that you're talking about when it comes to, we're doing this right, it's lower cost to market. That's because we've learned that. That doesn't mean it's right. It's what we have learned in school. I'm going to change you a little bit. Lower cost to market, I think, could be a problem. We might be creating ourselves in a financial mindset that, yeah, it's conservative. We don't want to overinflate the P&L and all that. But then again, if we're making bad decisions, pricing decisions become of it, then I think we have a problem.
I see this in today's environment in the advanced manufacturing that is consuming these really high-valued raw materials, highest-valued companies in the world are making. I won't call them out by name, but think about it. They're in the same boat. So it doesn't matter whether you're looking at these core primary processing businesses or businesses that are the most valuable businesses in the world. They have the same issue when you think about it, because they're producing products that are increasingly higher in value, right? And they're going into higher-value products from there. So the value of those products goes up and up. And I keep talking value and not cost, because if you thought about it from a cost perspective, the cost of manufacture didn't change on those, but the value continues to rise. So if those businesses don't reflect the value increase that they're actually creating in the marketplace, they're suboptimal in profitability. And so it doesn't matter whether you're on the primary processing of the least expensive things in the world or the most valuable, tiniest things you could make in the world. The logic of this applies. And I've seen it in both kinds of businesses. So I use that as an example because it doesn't restrict itself. It is a larger scale one. On the distribution side, I've seen similar things happen there as well, which is, say it's a 3PL operator who's handling multiple products for multiple companies, and 3PL, third-party logistics operator, and they're handling multiple products through their warehouses, and they have a core base charge per pallet to handle it. So whatever that is. I use the example, say it's $5 a pallet. Doesn't matter what it is. It goes through $5 a pallet. And then they have special handling charges, and those special handling charges are usually a set number as well. A special handling charge could be, say it's another $10 for a special handling charge on the cost side of that. What may not be reflective is the real cost of that handling. And does that special handling, is that just separating and pulling a pallet sheet out from under it or putting a pallet sheet in? That's one thing. Or is it a case pick type pallet that then you go out and you've got to handle every case? Your breakage goes up, your spoilage goes up, your handling costs go through the roof. Those kind of things really need to be looked at. So what I've come to with multiple of these businesses is to come back to a concept that I grew up in finance in the 80s and 90s, and it was activity-based costing. And had the activity-based costing concepts continued to be in vogue and not considered so old school, a lot of these things wouldn't have happened. The profitability of these businesses would be far greater. And these are some simplistic rules, again, for your audience on the CFO side, to apply. That's really a finance function. that comes into play that then should be transferred over to the commercial side so that the commercial teams can execute properly. They may have the skills, but they're not devoted to doing the work of the true activity-based costing to understand what does it really cost for us to do this so that we can sell it correctly. And I think that's the point that a lot of these finance teams have missed is because FP&A has become such in vogue, some of the core processes around good finance and financial management in these companies, such as just plain old cost accounting, have actually been lost as an, whether it's an art or a science, and it's both when you get down to it. But the business side, your commercial teams really need that kind of input to make the proper decisions for the business so that you drive the profitability in the right way. So there's multiple aspects of this conversation that we're having, Steve, that really say, hey, finance executives, you need to become more in tune with the business of the business to really help the profitability. And this is a lot of hard work really up front that has to be done. And it's things that I would say 30 years ago were very commonplace, but today you're just not seeing it done like it used to be done.
FP&A kind of looks everything forward, but accounting is really making sure everything behind you was properly reported. And you really can't have great FP&A, is my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. FP&A, it should be forward-looking. That's absolutely true. But there's been such a push for resources just to go to FP&A to the forward look that you're missing the today business.
The fundamental.
Of what will tomorrow be. Because if you don't get today right, tomorrow doesn't look as good.
You're going to make one of our contributors. So Gary Kokens, who is the godfather of EPM, Enterprise Performance Management, is a huge ABC girl. He learned under Kaplan and Cooper, but he's also one of our contributors. So I'm just going to toss out to Gary. Make sure you look at Gary's, for all our audience, make sure you're reading Gary's stuff. Lynn, you should meet Gary as well, because I think you guys will definitely talk turkey. But interesting that we've lost this piece. We've lost this technology in the newer CFOs because the ERP is going to do it. We're going to automate everything. But the knowledge base can dissipate if we can look at that. And I think that may be kind of what's happening. That assumption, now we don't have to do it, is a problem.
Yeah, there's a large part of it too is how you set these systems up. And I think one of the large pushes from many entities, and I see this in private equity held businesses as well as publicly held businesses, is they try to stay as true to the core software without customizing as much as possible. Totally understand that, because the more you customize, the harder it is to maintain. At the same time, if the business really dictates that you have a need for this kind of information, the other thing that I'm recommending over and over to these other businesses, look, don't mess your ERP up. Put these other systems that are well-designed for that to be the infi. Do the work outside the ERP. Do it over here so that you actually establish the right values and understand that, and then you can feed that back in. If the ERP is not capable, and in some of these ERPs, there are different capabilities. I'll say that. There are different capabilities in the ERP. I won't say good, bad, or different. They're just different. But the ability to do these things outside and to get the understand the real values, that exists. And they're external systems. They're far less expensive than any ERP. And at the end of the day, they're probably actually more valuable because the ERP is just taking care of transactional work, which you need day in, day out, the routine of the business. And you look at this value work that could really be done by these other systems, bring that back in as inputs to your business and into your decision-making, which will drive you to higher levels of profitability. And at the end of the day, businesses who are structurally making decisions off of ERP-only information are not making the best decisions in the world, and particularly given the capabilities that exist today with all the AI that's there. And the tools are fantastic that are out there today. And if the businesses aren't deploying those pricing-type tools, I bet their competitors are, and they better watch out, because it is definitely needed. If a business is functioning in ERP and Excel, those two systems like Microsoft Excel and whatever ERP system you have as your core commercial and pricing systems, there are far better tools available to you to make exceedingly better decisions than you can make in Excel and ERP.
How much the CFOs get involved in pricing? They support pricing in a lot of places. Rarely are they the price setter, but they're supporting prices with information tools.
Something that's interesting, though, in most of the contracts I do with these companies, they're either CEO, CFO, Chief Commercial Officer driven. Those are the three C-suites, sometimes the Chief Strategy Officer. But those are the key drivers because they say, hey, we know there's something here. We don't know exactly what it is. Will you come help us with this just to figure it out? And I can go in and help them and say, okay, here's the issues. You have to do something about it as the company. You have to make the changes to do what you want to achieve. Are you going to continue to have these issues going forward? And then once you identify that and you step back, and we're talking some of these businesses I've worked with, these are not small issues. These are tens and hundreds of millions of dollars of issues that you're talking about that are challenges that we're identifying and saying, if you would choose to do this in a different way, here's the outcome that you could expect. And oh, by the way, if you do this, you're going to make 10, 20, 30, 50 million more dollars here, and you're going to lower your working capital by 60 to $100 million. How is that a bad deal? You just say, okay, why would you not do that?
I think what you're also saying is, hey, a lot of people need help in the pricing area. So your ERP might be misleading. If you're trying to rely too much on that information, you're probably making some mistakes. But there's great tools in the pricing area, and that's where having an expert in that can be helpful. Right. What tools can we use? What is my industry ripe for this? What would you recommend? But call somebody who's a pricing expert and you get that feedback of where they're leaving money on the table. What's really interesting about this conversation is you're coming at it from two ways. One is, hey, get your costing right. ABC costing can really help you get somewhere. Oh, but by the way, there's an output that comes in that you better know your customers. So I want to read a quote from you in our last CFO talk. It said, when we do customer value segmentation, it's basically a pyramid. The closer you get to the top of the pyramid, higher the value being created. You should devote more resources to those customers. It's better for them and it's better for you. And I love what this conversation is saying. Hey, if your costs aren't right, it's really hard to get the pricing right. And if you don't know the customer and can segment the customer, you're not. And that's a higher level, right? That's really not cost plus. What you're bringing is those two things together. You better know your cost structure. You're going to report everything wrong and you're going to underprice and overprice in some cases and have a bunch of obsolete inventory that you're not going to be able to sell. And then, and also, hey, if you know your customer, then you can say this product really belongs in their category and they can make a bunch of money on it.
Steve, I'm glad you brought that back up because I was actually going to address that too, because the other side of that, we're talking inventory and we're talking product. The customer side of it matters tremendously because that comes back into the cost to serve also, because we were talking about really manufacturing distribution type costs, internal costs there, and not so much the investment in the customer. But the previous thing we were talking about in the pyramid, it actually suggests that you should invest more in those customers that help you make more. You may have this hundreds of thousands of customers, but invariably there is and sometimes the pyramid's that steep, sometimes it's like that, but there are segments of customers that you absolutely want to support, you want to invest in, and channel your resources through your cost to serve to support those customers that will enable your growth as well. And those are the type things I believe that also can come about through some really structured activity-based costing, because if you look at the cost to serve and the return on investment, whether you're devoting your R&D capabilities, your technical service capabilities, your co-creation, whatever it is that you're doing, you may even have joint ventures with some of these entities, but however you're doing those things, it should be reflected in the value that's being created with that customer. And it should encourage you to invest. And when you get down to the CFO side, I mean, we've talked accounting a lot, but this really comes to the investment side of who you're choosing to do business with, why you choose to do business with them, and how much should you invest in that business relationship. And all of those are critical questions that these CFOs should be challenging. The answer should naturally come from the commercial team, but if they're not bringing that type answer back, and believe me, not every customer is a strategic customer. If you hear that word, ask more questions. They're not all strategic.
So we have the cost side of things and we're trying to drill down ABC costing. There's a lot of CFOs, certainly in my vintage, who understand that. There may be the younger CFOs who would benefit by learning more about it. But let's look at the other side of that is now we're going to invest in a customer. And you rattled off quite a few different ways to do that. But when you're saying, hey, I need to invest in a customer, what does that investment look like? How does that process work?
These are investments that, and I'm going to go beyond what you would think on traditional, your traditional audience from a CFO. This is beyond payment terms, beyond credit limits. Those are like, that's, I hate the word table stakes, but those are table stakes to be in the business. Well,
and the reason I asked the question is because you use the term investment. And once you say investment, now you've got money you're going to lay aside. So you're going to have a budget for this. But, so that's what I'm trying to get. What does that look like?
The two previous examples I gave you, those are working capital investments. Those are true investments in the customer, the working capital investments. There are additional investments of resources that will not directly be attributable to a customer's account that will be made as well. So you could have customer teams, customer support teams, like I said, technical services, your R&D capabilities. There's just a whole slew of services that your businesses tend to offer. You can naturally measure what you're actually spending on it, but what's the investment and the value that it's creating with the customer? Because as you understand that value creation, it actually circles back to you with a greater understanding of how you can price those products and services to that customer, because you're increasing the value to them in the products and services that they provide their customers, because it's a customer business as you flow through all the way to the end consumer. So as you understand those costs, what value is that cost actually creating with your customer? And then what level of investment are you incurring in the cost relative to the return on investment and the value that you're creating with the customer? So two different metrics. One's easy for the finance side to discern because it's a natural thought. The second is a different level of thought in the value creation that's actually happening going forward with that customer.
Do you ever set up a matrix? So you're saying, okay, now CFOA, I want to invest in my customers. And here's what I want to invest in. I need a technical sales department, I need R&D, I need this. So you go through all this list. And then you say, okay, now here's the customers who need that. And you check boxes. And is that a way of segmenting? It's very linear. Well, I'm a linear person, but is that a tool that people could use to, here's what we can offer, here's who gets value out of it? And
there is a difference in organizations, in customer organizations, on the willingness to pay for those things too. If there are certain customers that just say, yeah, not going to pay for it. If you're not going to pay for it, should you really be offering it? Or is it a service that you value? And here's the thing that is really easy to find out. When you're in negotiations with those customers, if they say, no, it's not important, I don't want to pay for that, withdraw it from the offer and see what happens. We'd take it out of the offer. You'll find out really quick if it's a value or not to the customer.
Strategy.
Your finance executives are some of the worst. You take it away from the offer, they go, oh, wait a minute, we got to have that. You know it's a value. Take it out of the offer. As soon as they say, no, it's not a value, okay, fine, we'll take it out of the offer. You don't get that anymore. Oh, and then they go, oh, then if you don't find any value in it, then sure, we won't offer it to you anymore. You will really quickly have a sales team and a commercial team that'll find out what their customers really value.
I want to ask, getting back to this whole ERP costing technique issue, at what point does, and I term the question, inventory valuation or product costing stop being an accounting issue and then become a strategic business issue?
If you have an inventory valuation issue, which is what this costing issue will become, or it does, it creates it actually, it doesn't become it, it creates. If you have that issue, you are immediately putting a fact base in front of your entire business about what the margin capability and opportunity is for your entire business. And it will create decisions that are suboptimal, because if you do that, you're not going to create the level of profitability that your business really should be earning. So I don't think they're inseparable. I think that the ERP is functioning in the way that you set it up for your financial system, right? So your accounting system, that's the way it's functioning. It's doing what you told it to do. If you told it to do that, it's going to do it. It's not, it doesn't go make decisions on its own. So it comes back to financial policy, the corporate policy of how do I decide to set my inventory valuations as I'm producing these products. I'm making three products, product A, product B, product C, coming through my manufacturing process. I no longer want to value them all in the same way. I want to do cost attribution or cost attributes. I want to go 60, 30, 10. Automatically, you've created a valuation difference that's going to come through. You're not landing a man on the moon and getting him back. You're just doing math. That's what it really is. And it's algebra at its most basic form of how you're splitting it out. So those are some of the things that you can do. Now, those type decisions have to be finance-led because you will come into issues, particularly in your inventory valuation. You can't arbitrarily overvalue or undervalue products, even though if you're doing a flat, but you have to have some supporting documentation, some studies that you would have done both internally and market-based that would support those valuations on those on that inventory. And if you implement those type things, then it actually becomes easier for your commercial team and your sales team to take that to the market and go execute it. And what I've seen multiple times happen is when you have an industry participant who has not the best practices in cost and valuation, they're generally the one that is messing the market up for them and all the rest of the competitors. You want to be at least above average. You don't want to be the least knowledgeable because you're probably the one messing the market up.
I want to bring us back to a concept you talked about earlier, and it relates to some of this, but this idea that you can use a pricing tool or some kind of pricing that's different than your costing system, so it's different than your ERP. Did you ever find pushback where, oh, we have to have one source of truth? Do we have another reconciliation between some tool that somebody's brought in and our ERP?
Yeah. Let your ERP be the source of truth. Fine. Let it be the source of truth. What I would tell you is that the businesses who have these other systems, and they're really bolt-on systems, they're consumers of data. They consume data. So they're going to consume some ERP data as well. They have to. Your product spec, number one, has to be in there. Your customers, all that stuff that's already in ERP, they're consumers of data. That doesn't mean they have to use it all in the same way. And the reconciliation between a commercial ecosystem and an ERP system, I think, is a futile effort because if you think about a commercial ecosystem, you're selling products in the future, right? You're selling products out in the future with the best decisions about what the future is going to hold. Your ERP is a historical accounting system. It's looking at today and backwards. You're selling the future in a commercial system this way. You can't. It's a futile effort to try to say exactly on this day of the decision and today is the back end of January. I'm probably selling stuff for the summer right now, and maybe even to December. You measure the decision on the fact base that you actually had to make the decision on for the future, which is what you can capture at the moment you execute it today for the future and measure the value and the accuracy of that decision given the relevant facts that existed for the future decision, not based on the historicals, because the historicals don't matter. What is going to happen in June through December? It doesn't matter. Yeah. What matters is the future. So you have to bring your decision measurement point, and this is something that it's hard for finance people to get their head around, but the metrics around the quality of the decision, given the facts that existed that drove that decision, are critical. It's why if you're doing cost plus pricing and you're selling the future and you have inaccurate cost or incomplete cost structure, you're going to make really poor decisions for the future. Yeah. It impacts your profitability in the future, even though it was historically an incorrect or inaccurate metric.
In my mind, I interpret that is that it's not self-fulfilling. That's where I'm going to put it, but it's going to be apparent. If you've been doing things wrong, it's pretty easy to figure out what they have been. You're going to have obsolete inventory. You're going to have margin potential. If you price something a little higher, it's still going to sell. So then what you'll see is the realization that margins get better. Obsolete inventory goes down. Working capital improves. So those things that you're talking about, so it's kind of those general markers that say, yeah, that was a good decision. But as you're going through what you're doing, you're going to say, yeah, that you can see this. You can visualize it as you walk through it. I appreciate that. That's a good way for somebody who wants to measure it, wants to put it on a piece of paper, wants to understand it. I think that's the way is that you're going to visualize the benefits in your head and say, oh, that makes a lot of sense because of this and this. And you're going to see it in the P&L over time as you execute on those new strategies. So for CFOs listening today, what is one practical step, if you want to give two, that's fine, that they can take in the next 90 days to regain control of their inventory valuation and pricing decisions? Can you give a tip or two that might help them get on a better track?
From the finance perspective, one of the things that should be immediately apparent, but I would ask your operational folks right off the bat, say, what is it that we have more of than we shouldn't? Just ask them that. What do we have more of than we shouldn't? It's a simple question because it'll point you in the right direction. What you'll usually wind up with, well, we're creating all this rework that's sitting over here and we can't consume it because it's higher cost than our virgin raw materials. We won't use it because it'll drive our variances up in our operation. So we just let it sit in the warehouse. As an example.
Some of the simplest questions of just your core business people, and that's on the operation side. It could be the same thing on your sales side, your commercial side. It could be your finance team. Just ever ask, what are we doing that doesn't make as much sense as it should? And then once you hear a couple of those things, then you ask those harder probing questions that are more directed to the point. So I'll throw that one out. On the sales side, I would suggest, what products are we selling faster than we think we should?
Okay.
How fast are we selling? Because it could be slower, it could be faster.
Yeah.
If they're selling faster than you think you should be selling them, there's probably more value being created than you're acknowledging in the price point that you're putting there. If they're selling significantly slower, the opposite may be true.
I get that. But what I really appreciate about what you're suggesting, and sometimes we forget this because we get full of data. We want to go look at a report. We want to say, oh, we want to figure out what the slow inventory is. We want to do this. And we're not talking to people. And what you're saying is, don't waste all that time. Go ask somebody. And then you can validate it later. But go. And so I think the big learning there is make sure you're out on the shop floor. You're talking to the ops people. You're getting their opinions, not trying to look at some static report that has no context in it and trying to make assumptions from that.
Talking to people to highlight what the opportunity is, then come back and support it with the data and the facts. That's the best combination. Absolutely the best combination.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to leave us with?
I just appreciate the opportunity, Steve, to visit with you and with your audience out there in the CFO world, because I know how important the CFOs are to the business. I know they have the ear of every CEO that you talk to, and the value that these CFOs today bring to the businesses is even as high as gold and silver are today, it's worth its weight in gold and silver.
We'll take that. I'm going to look at my next paycheck and see if it's that big. But thank you. And you know what I want to tell the audience? Lynn was and when I was at Cargill 20 some years ago, there wasn't a strategic pricing group. Lynn created the strategic pricing group at a huge conglomerate company. He knows what he's talking about. So if you have any questions on pricing or that, Lynn's LG strategic solutions, don't hesitate to reach out. Lynn works with big fish. I will say that he works with big fish.
We work with all sizes of companies. Yep.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're doing so well. And it sounds like Wichita is doing great. You have grandkids in the way and too much fun for you. So, I'll call this a wrap on this CFO talk. Lynn, thank you so much for really challenging these long-held assumptions in finance, and telling what the perils of relying on legacy systems and relying on outdated techniques, especially when it comes to product pricing and profitability. It's been great.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and the CFO audience.
You bet. CFO.University is a global community of finance leaders, companies, and trusted advisors dedicated to the professional development of chief financial officers. Learn more about us at www.cfo.university. Until next time, learn, engage, enjoy. That wraps up today's CFO Talk.